So I just want to thank each of you ladies for being willing to be on the panel. The committee gave them questions on ahead, and we're going to get started right into this. Maybe I can sit this way. So the first question that we gave them is, what are some things you have done or advice you would give for helping your children grow strong in their walk with God and their love for Him? So I'm going to let Nancy, why don't you go ahead and start?
Is this one working? Yes, it is working. Okay. And when I started this, I thought, oh, it sounds like a sermon. But you know what? This is so foundational that before we can instill solid foundations on the next generations, we as parents must know what we believe. That is so important. And it's important for us to be firmly grounded in the Lord to help our children, but it's also very important for me and for my husband and I to be on the same page. And be unified in what we believe and the principles that we're going to use to teach our children. I think that is foundational for our children. Some principles we followed. I heard a sermon, I don't know, some time ago, and this man had 8 principles that his family followed, and I thought, I guess we didn't do something right because we didn't have necessarily printed out things. But as he went through his sermon, I thought, well, we did follow a lot of those things, that they were important to us. And I'm just going to pick a few of them. And the one of them is worship that I'm going to talk about. And regular family devotions was part of our day. And it wasn't necessarily, the importance is not that we just do it. The importance is what we're doing, that we're passing on biblical knowledge to our children. But if we don't consistently have family devotions, we're probably not going to we need to be intentional about doing that. And another one that's was very important for us is attending church services. If the church doors were open, we were usually there, unless there was something pretty eventful. So worship was very important for us, for our family time with just our children and for corporate, our church. Another is music. Music is really important. We weren't the best singers, but we sang. And as our children grew older, we gave them good music, made sure that we had good music in our home, that they would learn some good and have an appetite for good music. A third one is stewardship, teaching our children finances. Finances can get us into trouble so often. And so we wanted to teach our children to tithe. We started with the little banks of 3 little banks, a giving, a spending, and a savings bank. And then as they grew older, of course, we didn't divide it in those 3 ways. But again, we're teaching the principle. It's not the activity. It's the principle of giving, tithing to the Lord and saving our money and not spending it foolishly. And our children need to also learn a giving heart. So they have to see us doing it. Not only at church, but everyday lives. We lived in a neighborhood with a lot of poor people, and Mel fixed many water lines and lights and, I don't know, dig ditches for the neighbors. And our children need to see that, fix meals. They need to see that, and they need to help. And when they can see us doing it, it instilled it in them to want to do it to help in when they're adults. Another one is education. We homeschool our children. I'm not a firm believer that that's the only way, but it sure worked. It worked well for us. One of our big principles was family togetherness, and I don't even have this in my notes. But I was a young mother. I heard so many older people saying, "I wish I would have spent more time with my children." I got so tired of hearing that. I decided I'm not going to get to this point in my life and say that. And I don't promise that all my time was quality time, but it was, quality time, but it was quantity time. And it's just important to have some values that we are going to encourage. But again, I can't overemphasize the first most two are our connection with God and our connection with our husbands.
Wendy, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Nancy. That was, very foundational. Very laid out well for us. The one thing that I thought of that, added maybe to the one of the principles, but just one specific thing a little more, was asking your child, is your conscience clear? Maybe in a conversation or something, asking them, is your conscience clear? Do you feel that you have peace with God? And yeah, if there was an area maybe that the child wasn't feeling at peace, and this was maybe a little bit as they got a little older, for a real young child, yeah, they couldn't understand this, but why did they feel like maybe that they weren't having peace in their heart? Jason Reed had meetings at our church this past year the one time, and he had this quote on one of his papers that I just thought took this question to the next level. I choose to live with a clear conscience, and by the power of the Holy Spirit, which lives within me, bear his glorious name with honor. And yeah, so we have that posted in our house now.
So I have promised these fellow panelists not to preach a sermon, but I feel like maybe I could. Because there's some things I'm very passionate about. And the thing, will this thing cease? Okay. So I guess the thing I'm most passionate about is, as moms, we have a lot to be anxious about. Our children are growing up in a hard world. And when we think about the foundation, what do we mean by foundation? Will our children build on it? Will they neglect it? Will they completely destroy it? So if I were to ask you, what's your goal for your children? Would you say that they would serve the Lord? Yeah. Right. So that's a goal that you can't meet. So it's your desire for your children. And our goal for our children is that we remove the barriers. Like, hypocrisy is a barrier. And there's barriers in who I am as a person that would make that path harder for them to come to know the Lord. Just a critical spirit, our own emotional dishealth, when we're not a good example to our children, poor relationships. So that's one way to think about it. Like, what am I going to remove those barriers for my child to meet the Lord and walk with him faithfully? And then that foundation, I felt like so much that was said this morning with Henry Blank and even the panel. Like, you can build that foundation, you can have that relationship, and yet there's mothers here that are grieving. And it doesn't mean you did it wrong. And there's mothers here that have a 2-year-old, and they're going to do it perfect. And we chuckle. But what that does in our spirit, for me as a mom, it's like, this is my highest priority. And therefore, it is totally my responsibility. And I didn't always know how to balance that. And for me, that brought anxiety. Especially, they say that you might need to stop me.
You have about a minute.
preach it, sister. they say that there's something that you really like about each stage of your children. We had 3 boys in 3 years, and when they were all 12. 13 and 14. There was no one that still loved me. There was no one that came out the other side. There was days. They would kind of go on this rotation. It's like axe murderer, preacher, just a normal Christian. And then they would rotate. There was always someone to worry about. Am I speaking the truth, right? But what do you do with that as a mom? Have you had the experience of like, you listened to what? You watched what? You were with who? And they did what? Right? That's a feeling that is very natural, but I think it's a feeling we have to fight. Because there is a releasing with our children and a being who we need to be. That is our first and primary focus. So sometimes we need to explore our own emotional health as in the reason. Like, what percentage of wanting our children to turn out right is our own image?
If I'm going to be graded as a mom, I don't want to fail. And what does failure look like? Struggling adult children. Maybe not. Maybe failure looks like you knew there was barriers that you were living. You were living in sin. You were doing this to your husband all the time. Maybe that's what the failure would look like when you look back and say, not because your children didn't turn out like you wanted it, but just as you evaluate yourself with God, that's different than grading yourself on how your children are turning out. And you can refute any of this with me. I'm just kind of talking from my own experiences.
Okay, thanks, Janelle. And each of you, that's great. And maybe that leads into the next question. What's an area you wish you would have done differently? So we just looked at some good advice to help our children grow strong, things that, good ideas. And does anybody have anything to add on that?
I'll keep going.
Just one more minute.
So I look back and I wish my relationship with my husband would be like it is now. I don't know if that's possible because I've lived longer with him than I did. And when you have little ones, it's hard. But don't forget that your relationship with your husband is high. And when you have energy, it needs to go there. Not primarily to your children. It does need to go there. So that's an area I wish would have been different. Not that we didn't try, but yeah. And one of our sons is a real thinker, and he says he wishes we would have engaged more with his questions. Questions can be scary. Like, so why do we believe this? Like, but work at engaging with those questions. I wish we would have done that better.
Okay, go ahead, Wendy.
God can work despite our failures. I guess I'm just realizing, more and more that, it was hard not to come up with a big long list on this page. And I just had to recognize that, even so, God has really, been able to work. It feels like, there was lots of areas of failures. And the things that I thought about, like the one thing was just being more intentional to teach generosity. And I felt like, reflecting on that, that was kind of, I think it showed where my heart was. I think, Janelle or Nancy kind of addressed this, it was kind of, a reflection of where my heart really was that, so to recognize, the things in my life and to become healthy in them. It does help with our children.
The more genuine we can be, that's a good help for our children, what I'm hearing you say. Okay, thank you. The next question that we gave them is, Scripture says we are to teach our children the commands of the Lord when we sit, walk, lie down, and get up. Can you share times of when and how you did this, how it may have impacted your children? So Nancy, yes, go.
The saying goes, more is caught than taught. And I constantly have to check my own motives. Why am I doing something? And are my children seeing a double face? We wanted to be the same on Monday as we were on Sunday. And when our children wanted to be the same outside as we are behind the doors. One of my life verses is Colossians 3:17, and whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by him. But just an example of trying to bring God into all everyday situations and explain things to our children. We were on vacation and we were standing and looking at a lighthouse. And Mel was, we probably stood there for 15 minutes, half an hour, explaining this lighthouse and what it's like for this lighthouse to stand alone in the midst of that rocky shore and let its light shine, and how we need to do that. And if we can use everyday examples like that, it's so good for our children. Another example is, in our home, we had posters up everywhere to encourage godliness, a lot of Bible verses, but on our front door there was a poster that said, go nowhere you wouldn't want to be found if Jesus came. Yeah. Another one close by is, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And our children are constantly seeing these things. We had boys. I realize all of us had boys. But we had one girl with three boys. And so a lot of concentration went into the boys. And we had a motto that said, treat everyone like a gentleman, not because they are, but because you are. Now, that's not a biblical thing, but we want to teach that godliness, that character to our children. I'll stop.
Good. Go ahead. Yeah, Wendy.
Did you?
Okay.
Yeah, let me get my thoughts together here. So, yeah, a lot of what Nancy was saying was exactly what, yeah, I was thinking about too. Just a togetherness. So I had one advantage that I don't think the other two ladies had. All three of our children presently live at home with us. So I could ask them these questions and get their responses. So that was a lot of what came out of this discussion, just family time, building camaraderie as a family. And then through that, the mutual trust that we could develop and friendships. And then through that, an openness. And they wanted to hear about what we believe. And, yeah, and we were able to just share honestly and openly. And just that whole thing of scripture in the house, yeah, that was something that I like to do. And prayer was a big part. When the children started to go to school, well, we had homeschooled a couple years, and then when they started to go to school, when we would meet the other family, we usually had a couple minutes, and right there we could just pray together about our days. It wasn't something we did every day. Sometimes they were studying for tests or something, but it was an intentional prayer time.
Yeah, like Nancy said, more is caught than taught. And so that kind of goes back to what I was saying before, like what is our Christian life and how often are we speaking about the Lord throughout the day and explaining our thought processes, or they hear them us praying with a neighbor. That's impressionable. It's not me being a mom and being a Christian to teach you to be a Christian. Closed system. It's for real, and it's with other people as well.
Yeah. Okay, did any of you have anything else to add to that?
We always prayed when we heard an ambulance. Mm-hmm. And now my children do that.
Okay, the next question would be, what have you done or recommend to do to help your children follow biblical principles rather than peer pressure when there's that conflict?
You want me to start again?
Sure.
We had several phrases that we spoke often to our children. And one is, it's always right to do right. And another one is, when they were getting older, is don't look for the right person, be the right person. Don't try to figure out who your life mate's going to be. Just be the right person, and God will take care of the rest. And another thing that was kind of hard, and it was kind of hard for me to let other people know that it was happening in our home, but as my children are older now, and I'm realizing that there's a lot of people that struggle with this, but give our teenagers, and Janelle alluded to this a little bit, but give them chance to wrestle those hard things at home. We had one child especially that just liked to debate, and he's trying to figure out why we do something, and him and his dad would go round and round. And sometimes I thought, oh, sounds like an argument. And then I'd often end up, when they were done, saying, I hope you sometimes see this differently. But for you moms that are in that stage, I just want to encourage you. That boy came back to us when he was married and thanked us for those conversations, because it helped him. He was a processor that had to hear himself and hear us, and it helped him process and know what he believed, and he thanked us for those conversations. So don't get too alarmed when it sounds like a big argument, because it might be just processing and trying to figure out what they really do believe.
When I think about peer pressure, I think about what motivates us to cave to peer pressure, and it's the need to be accepted, to be cool, and we face it as women. And so I felt for us, like, how dependent am I on my peers? Do I cook outside of my own style when people come over? Do I dress outside of my own style? Like, am I who I am? Am I comfortable with that? And to model that for our children, just a healthy self-respect, and in a way, have a culture as a family of just bucking the trends. And it's perfectly fine, and we're still cool enough. You can never be, you can never be too, real, real cool, but we're cool enough, whatever. But then when I said that to one of our sons, I said, this is kind of like, what do you think of this opinion? He says, yes, but make sure you're not, like, weird. Like, so independent. It's like, hey, whatever. I said, so were we weird? He said, yeah, maybe a little. Part of his point was, like, still listen to us. Don't just say, well, that's just a fad. We're not doing fads. Well, as a teenager, that's hard to hear over and over and over again. And when do we engage and say, yeah, that's an acceptable fad? Or when are you just like, that's us? Yeah. But I think it comes back to us as moms. How do we handle peer, and dads, how do we handle peer pressure? If we are handling peer pressure poorly, I'm sure it's almost guaranteed that they also will. Yeah.
Just one little more detail or thought that I had on it was ahead of time, knowing your boundaries or guidelines, have them clear in your own mind. I guess a little bit specifically for me and my daughter, like modest dress. So when we were shopping, we knew, well, I won't even look at that particular thing because I know ahead or when they're with their friends, they'll know.
Sure, right on schedule. Does anybody have anything else that you want to add to that?
Since I think
you
our
have
children,
a little more time?
Our children like stories about when we resisted peer pressure. Mm-hmm. We were teenagers long ago, but we had it. And when did you resist it, and when did you cave to it? And your own stories can be really impactful.
Mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. What kinds of things did you not tolerate, and what areas did you extend grace to your children? And what does this look like? And so, Wendy, go ahead.
So again, this was a real discussion with our family. Just in our children sharing their ideas of things we didn't tolerate, I guess the word that I clumped it under, and I'm not a real wordy person, but we did not tolerate disrespect was what I came around to. So with their siblings, they weren't allowed to be disrespectful with their siblings. There was a particular incident when they were all about junior high age or so in there, the word duh was a big word, and they started using this on each other, and I just cringed, and it felt so belittling to their siblings, and mm-hmm. So that was a specific, role, you want to say, that we just said, you may not say that. That was a word that was just not tolerated, and the word, we didn't say you can never use the word. Like sometimes I said, I was thinking, how do I want to make this a rule for our house? But when it was belittling, they mm-hmm. could not use it. Mm-hmm. Another thing, then, no disrespect with siblings. There wasn't disrespect to parents. A specific thing for me was that we did not allow them to complain about the meal. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to like the food necessarily, they couldn't say they didn't like the food, but they weren't allowed to complain. I worked hard, or whoever made the meal worked hard, and so, you showed respect for that. You appreciated it even if you didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And this could be a little bit, maybe
I guess I just saw a lot of verses about being kind and loving, and this song, "They Will Know We Are Christians by Our Love, We Will Work With Each Other, We Will Work Hand in Hand." It was like, how do we do this if there's, yeah, not just, if there's disrespect and so forth? I guess the next thing, yeah, is the one thing, this was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw this question, but it was girl drama, and I think maybe we can all understand that, that phrase. And yeah, I just worked really hard with our daughter to include everyone, I guess, to just not enter into that, to assume the best in others, and to talk things through with me, and we would work through it together and assume the best in the other person. Yeah, I think.
Amen.
Okay, that's great. I was going to say, what do you want to add to that? If you have,
to the disrespect. It gets hard. I think it becomes hard again when they're early teens, when they're feeling hormonal or whatever, or it's just this edge of disrespect, and yet it's hard to call out. But don't give up on it. I think respect is crucial, and as you model that, even how you respect them. And how you talk to them, even when they're in a bad mood. Do you have that edge of disrespect? Oh, you're at it again. You know, like, that's disrespectful. And to model a respectful way to handle a tough 12-year-old, whatever. There are respectful ways to model that. Another thing we didn't allow, even having three boys, is for them to physically fight each other. If you have energy to fight, go on the trampoline. Like, I know about that physical energy, but they weren't punching, and yeah, and if wrestling became fighting, it stopped. I know there's families with other values on that, and that's okay, but that was one of our things. Physical fighting was not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. But again, I was thinking when you were talking, Wendy, that how am I responding? Do they hear me talking disrespectful about what some other lady did or something? That's very important for what they're hearing from us. How am I responding to the disrespect? But I think that's a big one that we need to make sure that is not tolerated.
Okay, thank you. So the next question, how can we keep our children's hearts? We're going to look at some specific areas, but let's start with that as a general question. How can we keep our children's hearts? Janelle, did you go first yet? Why don't you go first?
When we think about keeping our children's hearts, it's not keeping a friendship with them. A friendship develops as when they're adults. They don't always have to like you, but what does it mean to keep their hearts? And I'm not quite sure how to define that, except you know when you lose their heart. You know that feeling where they would just totally disregard what you say. They don't have respect for what you say. They're kind of like, Mom, right? Keeping their hearts doesn't mean they're going to agree with everything you say, but they will have a measure of respect to that. And so you and I, if you have my heart, we've had a relationship and we've been through hard things together, and I've continued to respect you and love you, right? And so our children, you know, we can develop attitudes against a certain child. He's my tough one. Well, it might be true. He's your tough one. But watch how that comes out in your relationship with them. And they sense that. So keeping a child's heart, I think it comes back to, do we delight in our children? Who doesn't like to be delighted in? And yeah, maybe a 12-year-old boy might be hard to delight in, but find a way. They have their delightful moments. Be interested in who they are as a person. Be willing, my one son said this, be willing to talk when they have the time, not on your schedule. Yeah, we know that, right? It's like, I want to talk now, let's go out for coffee. It won't work. Might work for some children, but it might not work. But when they're ready to talk, you're there for them. And that's part of keeping their hearts, because you're willing to sacrifice for them in a in a way, when their hearts are open, be ready to be there with their heart. Humor. Yeah, I can be a little weird sometimes, but I'm like, sons, God made me, my quirky personality, and I'm gonna, laughing together is fun. Mm-hmm. And it's relationship building, and when they actually have a belly laugh with you, that's so bonding. And when you've had a teenager that you haven't had a good belly laugh with for a couple of months, you feel it. Like, oh, if only we would just connect in that way. So keep things light sometimes. Yeah.
Go ahead. Did you have anything?
No. I'll wait till the next one.
Okay. Did you want to say anything on that, Wendy?
I was thinking so many things when she was talking. The one thing I did think when she said about your tough child, I think this was in context with a teacher maybe, but often and tough or strong-willed maybe, they don't receive many smiles. And actually, that stopped me, to recognize my one son that, our personalities, just didn't bond as well. And it felt like I maybe was always on the lookout, to try to keep him in line ahead. And to make sure that I was smiling at him,
Okay, so then in broadening this out, what are some intentional relationship building things you have done with your children and family fun activities that you've done to keep your family connected? This is our last question, so we can each have 3 or 4 minutes.
We work together with our children as much as possible. But my attitude set the tone for my children's attitude so many times. And so I had to watch my own attitude. But if I looked at work as negative, my children would also. And one of my sons told me many years ago, he said, Mom, when you're talking to other women, tell them to teach their children that work can be fun. So many times we have this idea that work is all negative. And it doesn't have to be. But when I view the job as a means to get to a finished product, it makes my work more worthwhile. And let me illustrate that on a simple baby. Okay, we have a messy diaper. Who of us likes to change messy diapers? No, but I don't even think about it anymore when I even change a grandchild. It just needs done. And when it's done, everybody will be so much happier. So you just do it without drudging it and dreading it. It just needs done. And so look at the finished product. Don't dwell on the negative aspect of doing it. But to have a sense of accomplishment and to express that to help our children feel the success of doing work. It puts purpose in our work, and it makes it fun. Mm-hmm. We pulled lots of weeds in our garden. But if I just send the children out and say, you have to go pull weeds, that's one thing. But if I go out with them and we're telling stories or how fast can we get 10 feet down this row, it makes the job so much more fun. But a lot of that depends on us as mothers, how we're going to portray it to our children.
I agree with the working together thing. I don't think we always did that too well. Sometimes it was just like, go do that, because then you're out of my hair. I know as with preschoolers, we all tuck in our children. We continued that until they graduated from high school or later. I know. And I remember cracking up once, like, our son was out of high school, had a job, was in college, and he's like, Mom, would you come tuck me in? Like, oh, I don't know if I've heard that for a while, and I might not hear it again. And it just, And another thing with that, when my husband would be on a trip, they would take, our sons would take turns having long tuck-ins. So they would have two short, and you would have, the other two were short tuck-ins, and you tell me when to leave the room. So it could be 11 if they really feel like talking, you know, just, you tell me when you're done. Just keep rubbing my back, fine. And those were really, really precious moments. Your husband's not home anyway. You don't have to do this quickly. And we did that, yeah, into their high school years. And then it turned into back rubs or foot rubs, but then sometimes they talked. And I would, that's for me, it had to be intentional because I didn't necessarily feel like it every time. But it certainly was a relationship building thing.
Yeah. Time was what I thought, spending time together. And that's basically, yeah, what these ladies have been saying, the taking an interest in each of the children and their involvements, what are their interests and hobbies, and what are things that they're doing that we can just be involved with them right then and there, just being on the floor and putting Legos together or just spending time with them. And we were never one, talking about the family fun activities, we weren't big on movies. And when we did watch a movie, it felt like we were reminded again why this isn't a great family fun activity.
Amen.
And seems like they, yeah, very rarely hold to the Anabaptist values. But a family fun activity, my folks have a cabin in northern Pennsylvania, about 2 hours maybe or so from where we live. And, you know, it was cheap. It was a time to just get away. And that was just huge. Our children still ask, when are we going to plan to go to the cabin as a family? And just spending that time, that weekend together.
Okay, Nancy, did you have
Yeah, I have something else to add on that, but I thought they might have something on that work one. We also always tried to finish up our work on Saturday right after supper. By supper time, our work was finished on Saturday. If the dusting wasn't done, it was going to wait. And then after supper, we intentionally took time. When our children were younger, they worked on their Sunday school lessons or studied our Sunday school lessons. And then we played a game. And that was a fun thing to do on Saturday night. It kind of geared us down from the anxiety of the week and got us prepared for a Sunday. And we did this on into their teenage years, in fact. And as we played games, we could teach lots of character. Being honest, being loving, being helpful. And we can go on and on what we can teach by playing games together as a family. But our children really valued those Saturday evening fun times. In fact, our daughter was old enough to go with the youth. And she went with the youth one night, and they, after whatever they were doing, they went to somebody's house and stood around for an hour trying to figure out what they're going to do. And she came home and found out we had a lot of fun playing a game. And she said, you know what? I'd rather stay home sometimes. Well, this mom wasn't going to say you have to go run with the youth and be with your peers. It's fine to be with us. You can go with us on a baby visit and learn that having babies, you have to get up during the night, and you're going to have to do this sometime in your life anyway, so you might as well go along and hear these things. And so it was just fun to see that how much they valued that it was more fun to spend time with family. But I had to stop my work, and Mel had to stop his work, and we had to make it intentional for it to work. Another example that we did, and you know, you have to see what fits your family, but we tried to have our children finished with their formal schooling by 16, with a diploma, and then work for dad. Or our daughter worked at a daycare, but the boys worked for dad for 2 years, learning the electrical trade. We had a long-term goal of going to SMBI. For them, and they all did go to SMBI. They didn't all graduate at SMBI, but they all spent some time at SMBI. But having those 2 years with dad learning the electrical trade was really good for our boys. And Mel could find so many things to teach as they were working together. One day, they were on a job, and he's an electrician, so it's mostly men on a construction job, but there was a lady walking by, and she was not dressed appropriately. And Mel saw her coming, and so he said to the boys, "Now, boys, there's a lady coming that's not dressed very nicely, but we're not going to look at her. We're going to watch how silly the men look. You look at the men. You look at the men and see how silly they look." I'll tell you what, it curbed our boys. They started looking at the men, and it was more hilarious looking at the men than looking at the women. But if we can use those kinds of things to teach, now I know that's not for you women, but you can maybe pass that on to your men, to your husbands, but it just was good for our boys to hear that.
Okay, we have like 1 minute. Do either of you have anything to...
I was just going to say, with the movies, too, that was exactly... It was a teachable moment the movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yesterday, I think a lot of us were probably in Sandy's workshop on prayer. And we need to remember that. I prayed for our sons a lot, and I prayed for their spouses from little on up. And I don't know how our sons found these women, but they are amazing. My daughter-in-laws are some of my best friends, and I will say to them, I prayed for you before I knew you. And their spouses make such a difference in their direction and their stability. There's something about there's a lot of intentionality in mothering, and there's a lot of miracle. And intentionality cannot take the place of the miracle. The miracle is that step when the Spirit of God leads them into relationship, and we cannot make that happen. And an encouragement as a mom, don't forget that miracle. Don't forget the intentional, but don't forget that miracle, and be praying for that.
I think that's a perfect ending. So thank you for your attention, and we're going to hand it back to Priscilla.